From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. Along with our calls, some interesting topics, Zorba?
Yes. We're going to talk about sunshine and blood pressure. How does the beautiful sun affect your blood pressure? Positively, negatively, or not at all? And then we're going to talk about the huge increase in testosterone commercials for guys. And what does that mean? And should it really be used? Is it overused? And how important that is, really, for male health.
Excellent. What's our recipe?
Spicy avocado fries. Now, you don't think of avocado as something you would fry, but if you love avocados, and Americans love avocados, every year we eat more and more, this recipe is for you.
Yeah, I think you're on your own with this, so I'm going to take a hamburger break while you're running through this recipe.
You're not going to have a guacamole break, a little guac on your hamburger?
1-800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. 800-462-7413. To the phones we go now, Zorba. Our first caller is a listener in Rhinelander, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, this is Bill, and I want to thank the show's producer, Carl, for getting me on to discuss my question with you and Dr. Zorba.
Sure. Do you want to thank our technical director, Brad, too?
You know what? I would, because this is a very fine service that PR offers, and you guys are great. But anyway, Dr. Zorba and Tom, my grandson, James, he's going to be 3 next month, he refuses to talk. He does say a few isolated words, but he really doesn't use any sentences. Now, my daughter's had her to a pediatrician at St. Eve's in Appleton. Mm-hmm. They've done various testing on him, and they see no reason why he won't or can't talk. Mm. Now, I will say he understands everything you tell him. He's a smart little boy. He kind of uses sign language. He plays, he eats, he sleeps, he laughs, he cries, all very normal. But anyway, Dr. Zorba, I sure would honor your assessment and, you know, any suggestions you may have.
A couple of things come to mind. So first of all, for a child that doesn't talk at the age when we expect them to talk, first thing you have to do is check their hearing. And undoubtedly, that's what I assume something they did. Is the hearing normal? Can the child hear? They have good ways of assessing that because a lot of kids who don't talk, frankly, have hearing problems and ear problems. Those are the most common thing. So the second thing you look at is other developmental delays. In other words, if there's a cognitive delay, is there another delay? Is there a delay in walking and other things that kids could do? And we've got this. We know how children develop. That's number two. Number three is bringing him to speech therapy and seeing whether or not if he hasn't had a speech therapy consultation. I recommend that because speech therapists look at it in a completely different way because children can communicate through alternative means, like you said, sign language and other ways of communicating that you may then be reinforcing by responding. So it's estimated that infants, for instance, by the time they're about 1 year of age, they don't say very many words, but they've got about 100 different signs. Mm. Pick me up, food, you know, diaper is wet. Yeah. But basically, infants communicate by sign language. And years ago, I had a friend of mine in California who learned to sign. And when they had their children, they actually talked to their children and signed with their child as an infant and taught their infant sign language before their child was able to communicate. And they had about 100 different signs that they actually taught their child. So it's kind of very, very interesting with that. That would be the next step.
What he did do, doctor, was have a speech therapist come to the home.
Oh, okay.
It was a therapist that was qualified supposedly from birth to 3 years. Mm-hmm. But this lady worked more with sign language with James rather than, you know, working with developing a speech.
Uh-huh. Well, you may want to, I think, going back to that, this is where a second opinion from another speech therapist would come in because the real question is, why isn't James, your grandson, actually talking? So I would get another opinion from another speech therapist, or I would take James. I always think if you want to get a second opinion, the best place to get it is from someplace 100 miles away or in a different system, and they may be in one insurance healthcare system. And what you do is you then request a one-time referral to another healthcare system then get an evaluation. Mayo Clinic would be excellent. University of Wisconsin would be excellent. But I would definitely get another opinion. But I want to give you a story before that opinion.
Sure.
So I've got really good friends, best from high school, California. They've got a daughter who was above average. By the time she was two, she was reading Shakespeare.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, she wasn't really reading Shakespeare, but they were just – but they're best friends. Their kid wasn't talking by the age of two. And, they're, you know, you don't want to compare kids, but they were. And so their best friend's kid wasn't talking. At the age of three, their child still was not talking. They brought him to several different people. And at the age of four, the child still wasn't talking, and they had gone to four or five different people, Stanford, University of California, and everything else. They're in the car. They're at a stoplight. The husband is then ranting on the wife, saying, "Why didn't you go through that stoplight?" At which point the kid chimes in with, "You should go through the light. Damn it." The child had not said anything.
Is that true?
But yes, it is 100% true. That is the whole time. And then the child never stopped talking after that.
The kid,
it was a complete
up to that
list
point,
of words.
The kid didn't have anything to say.
No, but had been listening.
Finally, there was something worth talking about.
It was very, very funny.
That's interesting.
And the child, by the way, did not use the word damn it. There was another word that you cannot say on public radio that the child actually used. So the child was actually listening the whole time, and they kind of looked in the back seat, smiled, and the kid never stopped. And this was about 20 years ago. So I mention that because this is a very interesting anecdotal story. That child is listening, most likely, and bringing it in. And the question is, how do you get the child to start speaking? And you need a second opinion.
Okay. I will honor your assessment, follow through with it, and I appreciate the time. And you gentlemen, keep up the good work, please.
Thank you so much for the call, and we appreciate the strokes. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. But Zorba, before our next call, there is some concern about the increasing use and prescribing of testosterone. And I've heard you mention before on the program that you're concerned about this as well.
Oh, I'm very concerned about it. You know, you can hardly look at a sports show without seeing low T, high T.
Yeah.
And then all of the commercials are evocative of sexual innuendos.
Oh, sure. Know?
But this is a thing. If you look at Viagra, I mean, Viagra sounds like Niagara, and that's where the name came up from. I mean, and then you look at, you know, when it actually first started. So this is what pharmaceutical companies do to encourage use. The real issue is that erectile dysfunction, or in other countries other than the U.S., increased sexual pleasure among men. You don't have to have erectile dysfunction except in the United States. You have to have a disease in the United States to get it.
Yeah.
But in fact, in Europe and in Asia and all over the world, it's used as a sexual enhancement, and it's not thought of as bad. You have Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, and a new one on the market, which totally slips my mind. Those drugs, we know what they do. They're safe and effective when used. They can't be used with certain medications, and they work, and they don't appear to have much in the way of side effects other than the side effects of the drug when you take it.
But what about increasing testosterone?
Well, testosterone is a totally different issue. We know that the side effects of high testosterone can be a heart attack. We know that the side effects of high testosterone can be other issues when you don't need it. It is a hormone that affects arteriosclerosis, the risk of a heart attack and stroke and blood pressure and so on. And so what they've done is through you know, the use of these ads is told men, well, go in and see if your testosterone level is low. Okay, well, there is a huge issue within medicine. And most physicians do not believe that a low testosterone level is abnormal, like a low estrogen level in women was thought to be abnormal. So women were given estrogen, and then we found out, well, we produced heart attacks and strokes with that. You know, so we stopped doing that. But anyway, so they've sold this idea that low testosterone means you've got to replace the testosterone, and then you can have sex with women.
Yeah.
I mean, that, let's look at it.
That's the point.
They're not saying, they're going to say you're going to feel stronger, you're going to feel better, you're going to have better sex. The reality is there's no data on that at all. The data on drugs like Viagra, Cialis, and Levitra show that they actually work for men who want to have sex, who want to increase the enhancement of the basic biology that goes on with that. But the data with testosterone is not there. And I've got to give you a perfect example that happened to me this week. I had a gentleman who went to another physician in another clinic in another town, in Janesville, Wisconsin, which isn't far. Mm-hmm. Well, because I have Epic, the electronic medical record, which is awesome, which is wonderful, I've managed to look. There's something called Care Everywhere. So I could sit there. He said, I'm on testosterone, and I want you to refill the prescription. So I could go into Epic. He could sign a waiver that allowed me to look at his records. I was then able to look at his records in the clinic that he went to in Janesville, because it was right down there, and his doctor put him on testosterone. Get this, he had a normal testosterone level.
What?
That's what I said. I said, wait a minute. First of all, I don't really think you should be on this drug because I don't think it's useful.
Yeah.
Let me see how low your testosterone level was. I looked at the labs, and it turned out his testosterone level was normal. So I said, why did your doctor put you on it? He said, well, I said I needed it. And then he drew my testosterone and he said, well, let's just bump it up. And I said, well, that's really not good medicine. Number one, I don't think you should take it even if it's low. And these are the reasons. And then I think number two, if your level is normal, why did your doctor put you on it?
Yeah.
I don't think that was a good idea. So then I talked to him about Levitra, Cialis, and Viagra. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, you mean I could take those? I said, yes. Well, give me a prescription. So I gave him a prescription for that. I don't know. He's going to let me know, yeah, by something called MyChart. He'll send me a note on that. Mm-hmm. But it's a very good example of the overuse of these drugs. So my recommendation is, guys, beware. Testosterone has side effects regardless of the commercials say.
Yeah.
And although you may rub it on the arm, you're not going to look like that hunky model in the commercial. And the most important organ in the body when it comes to sex is above the shoulders.
Yep. 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, a listener in La Crosse, Wisconsin, joins in now. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba and Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, we appreciate it. How can we help?
Well, I'm 51, and I'm a truck driver by trade. I suffer severely from sciatica on my right side. And a couple days ago, I met with my chiropractor, and she said the real reason for that is my SI joint is non-moving or moves very little. She can get it to move during an adjustment, but it just doesn't stay mobile. And it really is excruciating. And I do exercises and I do stretching and stuff, and it just doesn't seem to... I'm looking for some relief, so I thought I'd give Dr. Zorba on the medical side.
Oh, sure. So, first of all, what about, when you're in the car, when you're in your rig, have you done adjustment to that? Tell me a little bit about the seat that you're on.
Well, I got a real new truck, and it's got a great seat. It does have air adjustable kind of all over. It's got the lumbar adjustment.
Okay.
You know, and I do that in and out, and I can adjust the seat. Of course, up and down, it's all air. It's really good. It's a semi. It rides a little rough, but it's just nature of the beast. And I, on a scale of 1 to 10, on a 600-mile trip, my pain is like 15, and that's not exaggerating.
No, I've got it. It's pretty painful. So you've got a good rig. It's a new rig. It's a new seat. So we've got that cared for. You taking anti-inflammatories at all?
Well, I listen to your show regularly, and you talk about that, and I do, and I do get some relief, but I don't as a daily regimen.
Okay. So number one, off the bat, for at least 2 months, I want you on 2 Aleve twice a day, whether or not you feel like you need it or not. And the reason is we want to get that non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug into your body on a very regular blood level. And sometimes that will reduce the inflammation of sciatica. Sciatica has multiple causes, one of which can be SI joint issues, and manipulation can make a difference. And the other thing is just being in a rig bouncing up and down and hitting that nerve can make a difference. So number one, that's what I would do. 2 Aleve tablets, 2 Aleve in the morning, 2 Aleve in the evening.
Okay.
Now, have you, when you're sitting in the rig, have you ever used, we call them a donut. They look like a donut. You blow them up and they look like a tiny little inner tube. And it allows you to get the pressure off the cheek, sort of the buttock, where the sciatic nerve is that bothers you. Is this a right-sided or left-sided, or is it bilateral? Is it both?
It's right-sided. quite extreme is what it is.
Okay. So one of the next thing you may want to do is look at a cushion that moves you so that you're sitting more on the other cheek. And you're not putting pressure on there. That's very, very important. When you're home, what sort of kitchen chairs do you have?
Just regular wooden, you know, kind of a high back chair.
What you want is you want to cushion that sciatic nerve all the time. So when you're home, you don't want to sit on a hard chair. You want to sit on a chair with a cushion that is comfortable so you're not putting pressure on the sciatic nerve. Sometimes if you can just get that nerve to settle down for a couple of months, you don't have pressure on it, use an anti-inflammatory, this can go away. People actually can get better with sciatica. And the final thing is on our website, zorbapastor.org, I'll put some link to some YouTube videos that I'll find for you on sciatic nerve exercises that may help. And we'll put that on. If you go to zorbapastor.org or you come to us through Facebook, I'll put a couple of links for some sciatic nerve exercises. I'll go on YouTube. I'll pick out the ones that I think are really good. I think YouTube is great for physical therapy exercises. You can really look at it. It's better than a sheet of paper. Far, far better. The pain is caused by the nerve being pinched by something. And that's basically it. And what we want to do is get the anti-inflammatory, get the seat adjusted, and not put pressure on the nerve. We can't tell where it's coming from along the nerve.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
you take care now.
We appreciate the call. Thank you. And before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's take an email question from Steve in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. He writes, "Gentlemen, I'm curious regarding your thoughts on the use of creatine monohydrate. At nearly 43, I try to work out at least 4 to 5 days per week with rest and stretching in between. I've read that creatine mainly helps to give the muscles more water, which I believe allows for a better workout and a faster recovery. I take a low dosage of medication for mild high blood pressure, which, with exercise, really helps keep that in check. In addition, I follow a very low-sodium, high-fiber, healthy diet. First, what are your thoughts on taking creatine? And second, would you have any concerns regarding doing so while living with elevated blood pressure?"
Let's head number two first. If your blood pressure is elevated, you need to be on high blood pressure pills and bring it down to a normal level. And for any supplement, if you take it and you're concerned about your blood pressure, measure your blood pressure.
Yeah, it's only mild.
Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Mild, moderate, or severe. If your blood pressure is elevated and you need to be on a blood pressure pill, I believe that mild high blood pressure should be treated. Mm-hmm. And we've changed the names, stage one, stage two. The name changes all the time. If you have high blood pressure, treat it. Mm-hmm. If you're concerned your supplement is raising your blood pressure, measure it. Now, creatine. There are a number of bodybuilders who say it works. You know, it's a supplement, hasn't been studied very much at all. There's no hard and fast evidence that it really does work. I don't have anything against it. There are a lot of bodybuilders that say they have creatine, they can lift more, they can do more with it. It's a very interesting mm-hmm. supplement. I think you can try it, see if it works, if it gives you more strength, more stamina. Take it, see if it does. I like the concept of getting one that is reliable. Mm-hmm. So go to consumerlabs.org, O-R-G. We'll put that link on our website too, consumerlabs.org. They are an independent investigator of supplements. Mm-hmm. I think they're like Consumer Reports, but I think they're even better. Look up the creatine that they say is good, mm-hmm. and that's the one to buy because they look at it. A lot of creatine doesn't have much creatine in it. It is not regulated well by the FDA.
Any connection between using creatine and the high blood pressure?
Not necessarily. Not more than any other supplement. But I think doing your due diligence and then finding the right one and then checking your blood pressure is the thing to do kind of with any supplement.
Want Zorba to work out your healthy living question? Just send your concerns along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our recipe is coming up next. More of your calls, of course, some more interesting research to kick around. And, of course, our medical MythBuster, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More of your calls coming up at 1-800-462-7413 after our recipe. And it is recipe time, Zorba. Spicy avocado fries.
Yeah, do you like avocados?
No. The only
Do you like guacamole?
No. The only thing about this recipe that is at all appealing to me is the word spicy.
Spicy. Yeah. Well, first of all, any way that I can eat an avocado, I love. And
okay.
This is a very interesting, extremely simple recipe that avocado lovers will love. So here's what we start out. 3/4 cup of panko breadcrumbs.
Yeah, what is that?
Panko is a traditional Japanese breadcrumb, and it is it's a crunchier breadcrumb. That's the best way to explain it. And mm-hmm. In fact, those are the only breadcrumbs I ever use now. Have you ever gone to a Japanese restaurant and had tempura, like shrimp tempura or vegetable tempura?
Oh, absolutely.
It uses panko. That's the crunchiness of the breadcrumb, uh-huh. And that they're wonderful. So 3/4 cup of panko breadcrumbs.
Yep, and?
2 tablespoonfuls of ground flax.
2 big T ground flax.
Yeah, you put that in your Carnation Instant breakfast every morning to give yourself fiber, right?
I could.
You could. Yeah. You could. Yeah. 1 teaspoon of mild chili powder, or if you want to, any kind of chili powder you want.
I'd go really, really heavy on the chili if I was doing
this.
This is chili powder.
Yeah. This is chili powder. And this is the chili powder that you use when you're making chili.
Okay.
Okay. 1 egg.
1 egg.
2 avocados.
2 avocados.
Some vegetable oil cooking spray.
Mm-hmm.
And a bit of salt.
Yes.
A bit of salt. Okay. Heat the oven to 400. Then in a bowl, combine 3/4 cup of your panko breadcrumbs, 2 tablespoonfuls of ground flax, and 1 teaspoon of chili powder of your choice, mild, mm-hmm. moderate, or severe. In another bowl, whisk the egg and then put that to the side. Then cut... First of all, peel the avocados, mm-hmm. and then you take out the stone that's in the inside and cut them into 16 wedges. You've got these little wedges of avocado.
Yeah.
Dip the wedges in the egg and then press them into the mixture, okay? Mm-hmm. And then put them on a cookie sheet. But first of all, you want to spray that cookie sheet with some vegetable cooking oil spray, mm-hmm. so they're not going to stick. Then... Once you have them on the cookie sheet, spray the avocado wedges that have this egg panko mixture in it with vegetable oil spray again. So mm-hmm. the spray is going to be underneath them and the spray is going to be on top.
Got it.
Bake until crispy, about 10 to 12 minutes. Drizzle with salt and serve it with your favorite
then
hot sauce.
Then you eat them like French fries.
Yeah, eat them like French fries. They're avocado fries.
Maybe I would even be willing to try this.
Really?
No, I'm just kidding.
You are just humoring me, aren't you? In other words, you really wouldn't be willing to try it. But if it were put in front of you, if Monica made it, you would try it, right?
I can feel comfortable saying that because it's never going to happen.
It's never going to happen. If you want a copy of today's recipe, come to our website at zorbapastor.org. You can see pictures of Tom, which you will absolutely love. You can see pictures of me. You can search our other wonderful recipes at zorbapastor.org. And don't forget, we are all over Facebook.
800-462-7413. That's our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, we welcome a listener in Naples, Texas. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, a lot of things. And my problem is insect bites. A tick bit me. It's on my thigh. I should say belly because I've got that problem with Dunlap problem.
Oh, Dunlap problem. You know what Dunlap?
Zorba, I don't know what it is.
I'll tell you, Tom. The belly's done lapped over into the lap.
Got it.
And so I didn't pay much attention. There was an itch, and I didn't pay much attention to it until way over in the evening, and I noticed the itch was turning to pain when I scratched or rubbed it, and I finally went and examined it, and there was a tick embedded in my flesh.
Hmm.
So the first method of getting the tick off you is to put a red-hot needle to the tick.
Mm-hmm.
So I went and I got the red-hot needle and put it to the tick, and no movement. I guess the thing was dead. And then I decided to pull it out, so I was pulling it out after the needle had touched it, and I had already burnt it, you see. So it was coming out in little flecks and pieces. And by the way, I have taped it to my calendar on that date.
You taped the tick to your calendar.
The ashes.
The ashes of the tick.
The scraps and ashes of the tick. There's one little egg there.
So you can, in memory of the tick.
Yeah.
In
yes.
memory of the tick.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm going to bury him one of these days unless see it. Unless the doctor wants to see it somewhere. And so, but I got all of the tick out of there. I know I did because, uh-huh. you see, this needle burnt the tick and my flesh.
Let me tell you, if a tick comes uh-huh. to you again, the thing to do. The best thing for the tick, what you have to do is remove the head. And the modern way is you get tweezers and you reach into right up to the head of the skin as far as you can, and you just pull the thing out.
Yeah.
In other words, instead of using the hot poker, my mother would use a match, but she burned herself yeah. once, so she stopped doing that. But basically, you don't have to get the tick to come out. You just want to destroy the tick and take the head with you, because the head is what has the bad stuff in it when it comes in. So next time, get a nice good tweezers, and you pull it out, totally pull it out. With the flesh is okay. Now let's get to the problem that you have right now.
Uh-huh.
What happened is the tick was in there. It probably had when the tick actually latches onto the skin, there are chemicals that go in the skin so it can get its blood meal out of you. It actually is an anticoagulant that allows it to suck blood out of you and then take it for a few days. That's what, you know, fills them up, and then they drop off and propagate to cause other bad problems. And so that particular chemical can be bothersome, just like a mosquito bite. Mosquitoes do the same thing. They inject an anticoagulant into you so they can get the blood out. And then it's the irritation of the skin with the tick and then the hot needle that you put in there. My recommendation, the first place to start, is go to the drugstore, get hydrocortisone cream,
okay.
over the counter, highest strength that they have. Get it, generic is just good, and you put it on 3 to 4 times a day. That's all you have to do, and most likely that will get rid of it. Now, if that fails, you may need a stronger anti-inflammatory cream from your doctor. Your doctor may want to look at it, but your doctor doesn't probably have to look at it. And there's a cream called TMC. It's a big name called triamcinolone, but we use the initials T. T is in Terry, M is in Mary, C is in Charlie.
Okay.
And TMC cream, 0.1% will probably get rid of it. And that would be my recommendation.
Okay.
And my final recommendation is I think you have to go onto the internet and find out what the proper burial ceremony is for a tick that you bury in your backyard.
In this case, I guess it's good that I don't have the internet.
Thank you so much. Thank you for calling.
Yeah,
really
we appreciate the call.
Thanks.
800-462-7413. And now Zorba, an Eau Claire, Wisconsin listener, is with us. Hi.
Hi there. I have 3-year-old boy-girl twins and a 9-week-old daughter. Mm. And my question is about vaccinations. My husband and I have decided to fully vaccinate our children, but I seem to be making friends who aren't vaccinating theirs at all. And I'm wondering, particularly for my 9-week-old, if bringing her around these unvaccinated kids is going to pose a health risk to her since she won't be completely vaccinated until she's at least a year old.
Not at all. And the reason why we vaccinate is to protect children from childhood diseases. So your child actually is partially, you know, he has some vaccinations. And it's not as if their children all of a sudden are going to come down with these things that, you know, that we're concerned about. So, no, I think your kid could play with their kids. I mean, that's why we vaccinate them in the first place. There's always been a strong anti-vaccination movement. And one of my mentors, Bob Mendelsohn, who died many years ago, who I love because he was a medical gadfly, and he had a lot of good things to say, a lot of good things to the fact that we were invading obstetrical care too much with science and it should sit on the sideline. He was 100% right on that. You want to
dangers of hospitalization.
The dangers of hospitalizations, the fact that doctors put people in the hospital, they're in the hospital too long. He was right on all that stuff. But like all creative people, I think he was wrong about other things. He didn't believe in childhood vaccinations. He thought that they were wrong. And I totally disagreed with him. Childhood vaccinations have made a major stay in health. Now, what about these unvaccinated kids? Well, the chances of their getting polio are about as remote as getting on a spaceship and going to Mars. Because the only polio in the world right now are in certain provinces in Afghanistan, a little remote place in Nigeria and Pakistan. So polio is pretty minimal. But we inject people with polio. We stop the oral vaccine because we're producing about 5 to 10 cases of polio with the live polio vaccine. Better vaccine, but now we go to the injectables, so it's safe. So the reality is the parents who are not vaccinating their children, I believe, are part of a I'm not going to call it a cult because that's a very nasty term. I think they have a religious belief. They may not call it such, that vaccines are bad. They hold on to them very well, and I don't think they balance it with the scientific reality that vaccinations are good. And I think that's their kind of their choice as a parent, but I think it's a bad choice. And I used to not think it was a bad choice. I just thought it was a choice. But I've now come to believe vaccines are great because I've seen in my lifetime the tremendous help in childhood diseases and how healthy our kids are with vaccinations. So I'm totally on top of vaccinations. But you can take your kids. They're safe. They can play together. And if you try to convince them to vaccinate their kids, good luck.
Yeah, I won't even try.
No. It's not going to happen. You know, like my mother would say in our family, there are two things when people come over that we don't discuss. We don't discuss religion and we don't discuss politics. And I think she could put a third thing, and we don't discuss vaccinations.
Exactly.
Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. And you're going to be up to here with the emails on this one, Zoe.
Absolutely. You know what? Bring it on.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. And, Zorba, speaking of hot-button issues, time now for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Today's email comes from Mary in Green Bay, Wisconsin, who takes umbrage with Zorba's comments about genetically modified organisms, or GMOs. She writes, "Dear Zorba, recently, a caller asked what you thought about GMO foods and if they are safe. You compared it to hybridizing vegetables, i.e. producing veggies without seeds. That is not at all what a GMO is. Large corporations are genetically modifying vegetables and grains so they are not affected by herbicides. They are spraying commercial-strength Roundup on the crops now without hurting the crops. Not only are these crops changed on a molecular level, but they are drenched in round after round of chemicals, which scares me a lot. Where hybridizing combines different carrots to make a sweeter or longer carrot, GMOs are changed to be immune to being killed with herbicides. I am simplifying this a great deal, but I wanted to clarify what the differences between the two are. And I have to point out, Zorba, that this is the one email that we picked out of the gazillion emails that came in. This one not needing to be modified to get rid of some of the language.
Well, first of all, I thought that was a very good rendition of the difference between hybridization and GMOs.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, of course, perfectly correct. And that's why – but I want to answer two things of this. First of all, that's why a lot of people go to organic. They go to organic because they don't want to have anything that's sprayed with an herbicide. That's one issue.
Yep.
The herbicide Roundup is one issue. The second issue is this is an artificial manipulation on a molecular level, which, of course, changes it. But the third issue that we often don't discuss is hybridization. The reality is if we look at the corn that we eat today, organic or otherwise, if we look at the potatoes that we eat today, the carrots that we eat today, organic or otherwise, they've gone through hybridization of hybridization of hybridization. Be it a natural method, they're not really heirloom. Now, there are heirloom tomatoes that we can see. There are some heirloom potatoes that we see. But if we really want to go back to our roots, and there's some people that do, you really have to go back to the precursors to these that tended to be less sweet more fiber, and have fewer calories. Yeah. And that really is the true organic that started with that. Yeah. And I would refer people to the book, The Story of the Human Body by Lieberman, who really goes into this in detail. Nonetheless, I want to correct any error that I meant. GMOs and hybridizations are horses of a completely different color. It's like comparing peaches to an elephant. Yeah. There is no comparison at all. And any misstatement that I made about them is there. And there is a huge controversy concerning GMOs, and there'll continue to be a controversy concerning them.
Well, is it fair to say that the possible dangers of the spraying, that issue is still...
I think the spraying and pesticides are always an issue. Those are chemicals. And the concept also behind some GMOs was they would then produce their own antifungal in there, so they didn't have to use the same number of pesticides. I mean, part of the GMOs are that you have a reduction in the use of pesticides. The thing that scares me the most are pesticides. I remember when I moved into my house years ago, and 2,4-D, one of the pesticides, was around. Not pesticides, it was an herbicide. And my neighbor was around spraying the lawn with 2,4-D for the dandelions. And my lawn was filled with dandelions, which it still is. And they said, you know, can't get rid of these dandelions. And I said, you know, why don't you just live with the dandelions? And they said, well, we just spray it. And I said, I don't know if that stuff is safe. Well, lo and behold, 2 years later was outlawed as causing cancer. And then... And get this, eventually his wife died of ovarian cancer. Now, was that from the 2,4-D or was it not from the 2,4-D? I don't know, but it was a discussion that we had. It's really kind of a question because that stuff is around.
Remember DDT?
I remember running through DDT. Do you remember running through DDT?
Yeah.
Oh, they used to do it in our neighborhood. They would put in clouds of DDT. They would do it in the Wisconsin Student Union before you would actually watch a movie. They would spray it with DDT. Mm-hmm. I remember the smell right now. So the pesticides scare me more than the GMOs. On the other hand, some people are scared as much by the GMOs and pesticides, and perhaps they are right.
If you think Zorba's advice needs some modification, drop us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. More of your calls coming up after we check out some interesting research, our medical myth buster later on in the hour. Here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More of your calls coming up at 800-462-7413 after we talk about sunshine and, Zorba, some studies linking sunshine with blood pressure?
Yeah, with high blood pressure. You know, these are studies. They looked at people with mild high blood pressure. In other words, you're sort of on the border. You've got high blood pressure. You may need medication. You may not need medication. And we'll go into that, you know, how you would lower that risk. But blood pressure tends to be lower in the summer. Tends to be more in the wintertime. And so some people question, well, you know, in the summer we're out there, we're doing more things. We know exercise lowers blood pressure. You know, in the wintertime you're kind of inside.
Yeah.
I've
got a better thing.
Yeah.
Stress.
Well, stress, yeah. Perfect. Perfect. You mean wintertime is more stressful?
Yeah, more stressful than summertime.
There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. Wintertime is definitely more stressful. Regardless of the cold, the fact is, well, it is the cold, but you're inside, it's darker, it's more stressful. But they took 24 healthy volunteers, this particular study, and gave them some ultraviolet radiation for 30 minutes. Very kind of, that's the intensity that you get in a sunny day in the south of Europe, which is, of course, the south of Europe. But anyway, they found a small but significant drop in blood pressure for people who received this radiation. Then they looked back at blood tests, and they looked at something called nitric oxide. And nitric oxide is a gas that we produce that is intimately involved in the regulation of blood pressure. And they, lo and behold, they found that UVA radiation increased the release of nitric oxide into the bloodstream, and that was probably the reason why there was lowered blood pressure. So in other words, sunlight itself may lower blood pressure.
Bad news for those of us who live in Wisconsin.
Well, that's it, because we know that high blood pressure tends to be more as you get farther north, and we know that it tends to rise in the winter. Okay. For those who live in northern climates, it's bad news. But it reminds us again that high blood pressure, and a lot of people need pills, but a lot of people can get better control with changes in their lifestyle. One example is exercise. We know it brings it down. Reduction in salt. We eat too much salt. Getting rid of a teaspoon a day of salt can make a big difference. Losing 5 or 10 pounds, that can make a difference. A more Mediterranean diet can make a difference. And if you're in the north, going south and becoming a snowbird might make a difference.
I wonder if these light boxes like you use would make any difference.
Well, that's very, very interesting. This particular study didn't look at it. You don't want to have a box that actually gives UVA radiation. They were trying to initiate the sun. But that's a very good question. And that particular study didn't answer that. And if it turns out that a light box, such as I recommend for seasonal affective disorder, will make a difference in high blood pressure, that may be something that people do in the wintertime. Nonetheless, any chance that you have to go out in the sun will improve your cardiovascular health, especially in the winter.
1-800-462-7413, toll free. Back to the phones we go, Zorba. A listener joins in now in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Dr. Zorba. Great to be talking to you. Wife Gail and I listen to you every week on driving home from a yoga class. My question revolves around exercise and blood sugar. My blood sugar, my A1C, is usually between 5.8 and 6.2, but lately I've been having, you know, bad colds. And I haven't been exercising as much, and my blood sugar, when I check my on my finger, has gone up from, you know, below 110 to where it's like 140 to 150 now. I'm kind of wondering if it's a function of lack of exercise.
Probably. Yeah. So you're a diabetic, right?
Well, they're saying borderline.
So you're borderline diabetic. You either have what we used to call pre-diabetes. Now we say glucose intolerance, and, you know, we give it a whole bunch of different names because there's a hemoglobin A1C, there's an abnormality, and we have an arbitrary cutoff point, which is either 6.3 or 6.4. That, by the way, is the 90-day average of your blood sugar for people who are not used to the term hemoglobin A1C, which is probably 90% of our listening population. And, you know, getting that measured once a year, twice a year, you know, is probably a good idea. But usually lack of exercise will do it. Those numbers are still good, 5.8 to 6.2. You know, if you were a diabetic, those numbers, you would be at goal. You know, on medication, you might even be at goal and too tight control. So I don't think I'd be concerned. You know, when you do less exercise, you've noticed that your blood sugar isn't as good. The important thing for anyone with pre-diabetes, glucose intolerance, or diabetes is there are two separate factors in lifestyle. One is diet and one is exercise, and they're really separate. Exercise gets the blood sugar into your muscle, and diet keeps the calories from going in the first place. So like you said, if you can't exercise, those days your blood sugar is going to be higher, and just try to exercise when you can.
I definitely watch my diet, but I'm kind of wondering too about, you know, high intensity exercise versus you know, my normal 6 to 8 hours of ping pong a week.
Well, I think we put ping pong down the list of the right exercise to do. Higher the exercise for diabetes, the better off it is. And ping pong, I think for that, I would defer to the Chinese.
Okay.
Thanks so much All for right. your call.
All right, thank you.
We appreciate it. Thanks. You know, they, the Chinese and other professional ping pong.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
They
do.
That's a lot of exercise.
No, they do. They do. But you, they do. So I, for anyone who plays ping pong, excuse me if I disrespected you. I so much apologize.
So you don't want any emails on this one? You don't mind.
I don't mind emails.
Time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. And today's myth comes to us from Dan J., from the mile-high city of Denver, Colorado. He writes, "Hey, fellas, is it true that one gets more easily intoxicated at higher altitudes? I live in Colorado at an altitude of over 5,000 feet. When my out-of-state friends visit, I notice they seem to get quite a bit more dinged up than I do by the end of a night on the town. I love the show, and don't stop laughing."
Well, it all depends. Certainly those first day or two or 3 days when you have a little mountain sickness, you know, and you haven't adjusted to the altitude, I kind of feel a little dizzy. So I've noticed that when I take a drink and I go out to Colorado all the time to ski, one drink seems to me like two drinks. So the answer is yes. However, once you adjust to the altitude, the answer is no. Hmm. A shot of booze is a shot of booze is a shot of booze.
Have a myth you'd like Zorba to take a shot at? Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413, toll free. To the phones now, Zorba, and a listener in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, first of all, hi, Zorba. Hi, Tom. I love the show.
Thank you.
I am calling because I work nights. And I've been having a problem with excessive sleepiness and grogginess on my nights off. I can sleep sometimes for, 14 or 15 hours, which is entirely too much. And if I sleep just, the regular amount of sleep, 8 hours or so, I wake up and feel very tired and very foggy and groggy for several hours after I wake up.
Uh-huh. What sort of job do you do?
I am a critical care nurse.
Uh-huh. So you're high intensity, hard work. Are you on the night shift all the time?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I am.
And so what hours, 11 to 7, or what are your hours?
7 to 7.
7 to 7.
I work 12-hour shift, three nights a week.
Ooh. 3 nights a week. Okay. And then what do you do the other nights? Do you see other people? Do you change, your sleeping patterns on those other nights?
I try to keep my night hours.
Uh-huh.
I don't try to flip back and forth.
Okay.
But I feel because of the sleepiness and the grogginess on my nights off that I'm not really available and accessible for my private life, for my social life, for my family. I feel like I have a lot of non-productive hours.
Right. How much caffeine do you drink?
Tons.
Okay. Okay. I have a couple of suggestions. What you have, by the way, is not an unusual problem because, the rest of the world is on one schedule and you're on another schedule. So this is not an unusual problem at all. A couple of suggestions. And the first one might seem counterintuitive, but part of your problem with sleep may be due to the caffeine. The caffeine you need, you take a cup of caffeine, I take a cup of caffeine in the morning. Your morning, from a point of view of work, you could have a brisk cup of coffee. But I would stay away from caffeine for the rest of the time you're on the shift. And what I would do is I would pick an herbal tea. Part of it is habit. Part of it is the caffeine, but frankly, in critical care, your adrenaline is going to keep you up. And I would just try that and see what happens. You may be over-caffeinated, and then that may be interfering with your sleep. Have you used melatonin?
I have in the past
to
try to get to sleep,
mm-hmm.
Getting to sleep isn't my problem. Uh-huh. It's waking up that seems to be my problem.
Okay, so getting to sleep is not a problem. When you go home at 7 o'clock. What time do you go to sleep? 9 o'clock in the morning? 10 o'clock? When you get up?
Between 8 and 9 o'clock.
And then is the house quiet then so you can sleep well or not?
It is.
Mm-hmm.
It's quiet.
Okay.
I have the blackout curtains and all that good
Okay.
stuff.
I would set an alarm. I would get out of bed at either 7 hours or 8 hours. I would have a cup of coffee and start my day. That's what I would do. Or I would fragment my sleep into two fragments, which shift workers do, and I would sleep for 4 to 5 hours. If it's when you're not going to work that night, I would sleep to 4 to 5 hours, and then I would stay up to be with my kids or my friends or whatever, and then I would take another nap time for 3 hours. And I would regiment it and do it exactly the same way. And the reason is you've got to regiment this to get this under control, and you've got to use an alarm to get yourself up. Because that's the problem. The problem, I think, is caffeine and a regimentation where you're really very strict about that. And you can reset your biological clock. And that's what's happening. What's happening is your circadian rhythms are kind of all over the place, and it's disrupting you. So caffeine and regimented. And like I say, 7 hours and you're up. But if you want to get up in 4 hours, that's fine. You've got to figure out when your tired spot is. For most people, it'll be 3 or 4 hours later. And then you go back and you sleep for 3 hours. But you need 7 hours within a 24-hour cycle to really do yourself justice. It's a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
But you can do this by just taking a bit of those steps. And please let us know.
Okay, I will. Thank you so much.
Sure, thank you so much. Before we go today, Zorba, let's visit the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and take a question from Barry of the great state of Washington. He writes, on a recent show, you mentioned the most common times for strokes or heart attacks to occur were in the early morning. Somewhere I heard that the best time to take low-dose aspirin is at night. Is there anything to this advice? And if so, does it relate to the occurrence time of strokes and heart attacks? And by the way, I find it mind-boggling that you two have been on the air for as long as you have.
Yeah, we find it mind-boggling, too.
I've heard about that aspirin. In fact, I shifted. I used to take it in the morning. Now I take it at night.
It doesn't make any difference. It's a 24-hour pill. It doesn't make any difference.
But there's a difference in when you get strokes and heart attacks.
Yeah. Well, that's because waking up in the morning is the difficult thing. Getting the body moving, that's what it is. It's getting the body moving, starting the adrenaline going. That's the theory of why there are more strokes and heart attacks, basically, from 9 to 12 in the morning or 8 to 11 or whatever. So, no, it's the waking up process that's dangerous for the body. So basically, if you sleep all the time, you won't have a stroke, you won't have a heart attack, and you won't have a life.
I'll go back to morning. I don't like taking it. It doesn't seem
right.
Where did you
figure out it doesn't seem right? Take it in the morning. Okay. That's the way to do it.
Have a healthy living question for the good doc. Just post it to our Facebook page or send an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. And don't forget, we are on Facebook.
And you can call us anytime at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 02-15-Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.